Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
We're keeping a very close eye on what is happening in Ukraine. John Steenhuisen, DA leader, is there. We want to catch up with him, understand why he decided to undertake the trip, get a sense of what he is seeing whilst there and his reaction to local reaction. John Steenhuisen, good morning. Great to speak to you. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Howard. Great to be with you and great to be with the listeners. Yeah, I'm doing well. I hope you guys are all doing well back there.
So where are you at the moment?
I'm in Kyiv, in downtown Kyiv, in the capital of Ukraine.
Do you have electricity?
Nice sunny day today. Well, Howard, that's the funny thing. Let me tell you, this is a country at war and a city under siege, but the trains run, the electricity is on 24 hours. There's no water shortages, and all the traffic lights work. So go figure.
You see, that's what we need to do. We need to send the ANC to Russia. It'll completely undermine everything that they've ever worked for. But but either way, I'm being facetious. It's got to be very, very heart-wrenching in a way. People have lost their lives as they knew it.
Absolutely, and I mean, it just shows you how quickly things can turn. One day you're living an absolutely normal life, and the next thing your city is under barrage. And some of the sites that we've seen over the course of the last few days have been absolutely devastating to see the scale of damage done to civilian infrastructure, homes, apartment blocks, hospitals, clinics, churches, synagogues. All heavily damaged by fire and shelling and missiles, and obviously there's a tense atmosphere here. People are going about their daily life, but there is a tension, and you know the air raid sirens go off, and you have to make your way to indoors or to some form of shelter until the all clear is given. And so there is that tension, and the citizens here living knowing something is coming, but they just don't
they
know
just
when,
don't know what
or
when
or what it's going to be.
It's so in other words, a person living in Kyiv, somebody who has decided not to leave, and I would imagine many have left, they wake up in their day and they carry on as, well, obviously not fully as they would have, but they actually are continuing with their lives.
Well, they have to. They've got no choice. There's, you know, businesses to open and there's livelihoods to be made and, you know, and work that needs to be done. So they are doing that. But you know, the streets are empty at night. There is a curfew at 10 o'clock. So the bars and restaurants that I'm sure would be busy well into the early hours the next morning are all closed. There's a very heavy military presence in Kyiv. There's checkpoints down the streets. Large buildings are sandbagged. There are machine gun posts and anti-aircraft facilities all around the city, and very, very heavily armed military personnel. So it sort of gives you the sense that, you know, this is a country at and a city at war.
How difficult was it to get to Kyiv?
Yeah, it was quite difficult. There's obviously, because there's a no-fly zone here, and the airfield here in Kyiv was a part of a significant battle between the Russian and Ukrainian troops. It's not possible to fly into Kyiv. So we flew in from Johannesburg via Durban, because there's no aircraft fuel in Johannesburg International Airport, and to Frankfurt, and then from Frankfurt to Warsaw, and then drove from Warsaw through the border to Lviv, overnighted in Lviv, and then we were in Ukraine the very next day.
Is there a sense or an understanding as to why Russia haven't launched a full-scale attack on Kyiv, as they're doing in Mariupol and other areas?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is cut off the ports, which obviously has an impact on the ability of Ukraine to get its products to and from market. And that's why it's having an impact on South Africa. And we're seeing the rising cost of food and fuel in the country. Odessa, Mariupol, all of those ports are under siege. So I think what the Russian army is probably focusing on is trying to cut off Ukraine's contact and ability to generate income by shutting off those ports. Kyiv was quite significantly attacked, and when you're in the outskirts in Bucha and Irpin,
terrible.
You know, you see the absolute devastation of of those towns and villages there. It's horrific. I do think that you know, Putin was surprised, I believe, by the solidarity and efficiency of the counterattack. And I think he's probably withdrawn his troops over the border in Belarus to regroup. And I've no doubt that there will be some form of resurgence of an attack on Kiev. As I say, they live under daily missile threat. Mm. But I mean, there are other countries in the world that now that feels, most notably Israel. Absolutely. And so it is a tension. It's a tension that exists. Mm.
Mm. The reason that you decided to go to Ukraine, and I see that there's quite a bit of social media commentary on that. Should you have gone? Well, you know, there's so many issues back home. What is your response to that?
Well, I think that's parochial, it's short-sighted, and it's frankly immature to view political situations in a one-dimensional way. Just because, you know, you've spent a few days, dealing with a regional conflict in another part of the world, that in a global world is going to have a massive knock-on effect on our region and our country, I think is silly. And I think that anybody is welcome to go into my social media and other platforms and see where I've spent the last 2 years. I mean, absolutely. I was the only politician, absolutely, as you know, with boots on the ground in July. I was in Durban 2 weeks ago for the floods, handing out food aid. 2 days before my trip here, I traveled 1,400 kilometers through the Eastern Cape to look at rural poverty and deprivation there. And also these critics say, oh, you're only interested in Europe. Well, that's not true. I mean, I went to Somaliland last year to understand the conflict there. I've been in Mozambique. I've been in Ghana. I'm going to Kenya next in the coming months for their election to monitor that. So it's all this childish, immature behavior that you get.
Yeah.
And it's very frustrating when you see people like, you know, serial DA bashers like Juanita Hunter and others that, you know, always have to put the knife in no matter what you're doing. But you know what, Howard, I've learned one thing in politics. If you don't want criticism, just sit on your hands, do nothing and say nothing. But that's not me, you know.
Yeah,
and I think that politicians should. I think we'd be in a better place as a country if more politicians took more time to understand the multidimensional facets of a situation before speaking or making decisions on it. And believe you me, South Africa's got some big decisions to make in the coming weeks and months, or we're going to end up in a major, major crisis domestically.
The other aspect, of course, is the fact that given the ANC's appalling international track record and the way that they've dealt with Ukraine and Russia, it's actually it's even more important that the globe, that Ukraine in particular, sees that there are South Africans, and especially the opposition party, the main opposition party, that is in support of them and doesn't stand by idly and support an attacking nation.
Exactly. And I mean, I think that's for me the biggest disappointment in South Africa's positioning here. I mean, we should know better. We shrugged off colonialism and imperialism. We got rid of an undemocratic totalitarian regime and were rebirthed into freedom. Why would we not be standing on the front lines in solidarity when those key values of freedom, democracy, sovereignty, self-determination are under threat in a unwarranted attack by one nation on another? And the big question Ukrainians have asked, because they're very bewildered by South African stance on this, is that, well, what would South Africa expect us and the rest of the world to do if one of their neighbors rolled their tanks over the border and just started annexing parts of their country? What would they expect the world to do? Would they expect the world to adopt a neutral stance while it was happening? I don't think so. And I think we would expect our international partners to stand with us and to protect sovereignty. This is a violation of international law, and it's also fueled by disinformation. You know, this notion that there's neo-Nazism here in Ukraine is simply beyond the pale. I mean, President Zelensky is Jewish. I mean, I spent the Shoah at the Baba Yar Memorial.
Amazing.
Where I laid a stone on the on the memorial there.
Yeah.
And you know, this is a country that's deeply committed to, you know, to remembering the Holocaust and the Nazi atrocities. There's monuments all over. So the notion that this is a country that's now trying to reinstate Nazism is frankly absurd at its highest point.
It's and how have you been welcomed there? What's been the reaction to you being there?
Very welcoming, and I think that they're very grateful for friends around the world in their time of need. And it's been a very, very warm welcome. I've been able to see the people I wanted to see. They've been very, very forthright in their comments. They've been very honest and upfront. And it's been very, very interesting. And I will leave here with really good insights to bring back to South Africa, particularly on what we're going to have to do around food security in the coming weeks and months, because my takeaway is this conflict's not ending anytime soon. One in every three slices of bread consumed in Africa and the Middle East comes from this, made from wheat from this region. So what does this mean for food prices and food availability for South Africa? What is our plan to fill the gap from what we're not going to be able to get from this region? We've already seen fertilizer costs because of this conflict going up 300%. So even our own domestic planting is going to be, and pricing is going to be heavily affected by this region, which is why I find Juanita and Hein Kaiser and the rest is criticism incredibly immature and obtuse. And you criticize if you do things, you criticize if you don't do things. It's just you'll never make them happy.
No, and I guess that shouldn't be something you strive to do. You've just got to do the right thing at the right time, and ultimately that's just has to be your guide, not the, as you say, serial opinion writers who are very, very stuck in their own view, and nothing will change it, because you can view anything and see anything from the perspective that you choose.
Absolutely. And, you just got to manage around those and move past them, because like the COVID, government's COVID response, you may recall when we sounded the alarm on that, we were called all sorts of things, mamparas, and everything we predicted came to pass. And I am absolutely convinced that the insights that I've got here in Ukraine are going to be able to contribute significantly to South Africa's preparations and the broader debate around what's happening here from a more informed perspective. I mean, how better? I mean, Helen Suzman used to always teach us, go and see for yourself. Don't take what other people are saying as the truth. Don't believe everything you read in the media. Go and see for yourself. And, I've taken 7 days out of a 365, to come and see for myself. And, I've found it very, very worthwhile. And
absolutely.
I look forward to sharing the insights with South Africa when I get back.
Well, I was just going to say, I have no doubt that the party and the country, South Africa, will be richer for it. John Steenhuisen, DA leader, talking to us from Ukraine, explaining some of his observations, some of his concern, and also why he decided to take the trip. Thank you, John, and be safe.